Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Weiner, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. Like always, I have a question for you. Do you have an area of your life that no matter how hard you try, lasting change seems impossible? In today's podcast and post, we continue our study in Galatians, exploring how internal freedom is entangled with the captivity of our flesh. We're camping out on this topic for a few weeks because it's so many of us work from a flawed understanding, and thus we fail not despite our best efforts, but because of them. So join me now as we reframe the battle of the flesh versus the spirit into a dance of necessary tension. This not only allows us to live from a place of inner freedom, but it gives us the lens to see beyond everything. Hello, folks. How are you doing? I want to thank you all for coming back to another episode of Beyond Everything Radio Podcast. So glad to have you with me. My name is Kevin Weiner, and I'm your host. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do, just like you. And folks, we are in the middle of a series that we're working through the book of Galatians. I'm taking my sweet little time, and we are going to kind of camp out for the next week or so in this area of the battle between the flesh and the spirit. This is going to be something that I think a lot of you are really going to appreciate. You're going to get a lot of helpful information, content, and hopefully a reframing of your worldview. And this will allow you to live in a place of greater freedom. It'll help you to understand what is going on within you. And so as a result, this podcast might take a little longer than the usual. I try and keep them between 20 to 25 minutes. They've been pushing the 30-minute mark. This one might be just a handful of minutes longer, but I think it's necessary to put all of this into one thing. So get ready for a jam-packed new framework of this thing going on inside you, this battle, this dance of light and dark, of the flesh versus spirit. This is podcast number 174. It's called Tempering Over Desire. And so, as we get started, I think we need to start with Paul's discourse in Galatians, because as we got to chapter 5, we noticed that he's turned very personal. He was really exploring this idea of the gospel, freeing us from religious behavior. We don't have to take a goat to the temple to get it slaughtered anymore. We don't have to circumcise ourselves anymore. There's a new freedom, right? But then he turns this very deep inward, and he starts really talking about all of the things. And next week, we're going to talk about the junk drawer of human behavior, which he really gets into. But today, we're talking about tempering over desire. And he's talking about what he calls the flesh, right? The Greek word there, sarkos, is often translated flesh, but it may also refer to the human nature. You might have heard it called human instinct, maybe creaturely tendency. So often in Bibles, I mean, I can almost guarantee you that most of your Bible translations call it the sinful nature. And in part, that's because of the scripture that we're going to examine today. And last week, I wanted to bridge this idea of just reframing it as a shadow self, the shadow self, the dark side that we all know exists, and this battle that we have inside that is, gosh, we know we can be better than we actually are. And then when we try, we find out it's way harder to change than we think it is. And to really understand this term for sarkos, or the shadow, or the dark side, the sinful nature, as it's often called, we need to consider that humanity is really distinct from all other creatures in that we have the ability to observe our instincts, and we can also override them. See, a fox or some other kind of predatory animal may have the instinct to kill just like a human being, but that animal is unable to temper that instinct for the greater good. You see, these instincts are important for us to understand about ourselves, but instincts are not reliable gauges for societies that are pursuing higher consciousness. You understand that? So often I hear people excuse their behavior as it's just natural. It's just my instinct. It's just how I am. But that's not a good gauge, folks, if you're trying to be a high consciousness society. See, the flesh that Paul's talking about is our propensity toward lower functioning human behavior, because humanity is held to a higher standard. See, we can observe our behaviors, we can observe our instincts, and we have the power to override them for the sake of others, not just ourselves. So it's a higher integrated kind of humanity that the gospel and Paul is calling us towards. And so overriding and tempering our human behavior, our moral behavior, it is important, right? And we want to move away from lower functioning human behavior because it stands in distinction to what Paul calls the Spirit. That's the work of God within us, where we're each being called to a higher level of conscious engagement. And so Paul's admonition to us is twofold. And these are the two parts that we're going to first look at, and then we're going to spend the rest of the time giving you some examples of how this actually plays out. Okay, the first part of Paul's discourse here in chapter 5 is he basically says, don't use your freedom to give full vent to the flesh, right? And the second part is learn the dance of shadow and light, flesh and spirit, right? There's this reframing to look at it through the tension, okay? And this is how he frames it in Galatians 5, 13 through 15. He says, for you are called to freedom, brothers and sisters, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, the sarcos, but through love, serve one another. See, this is that higher level of conscious engagement, right? For the whole law, in other words, everything is summed up in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, he's saying you don't have to do the external religious set of rules anymore, but you have to kind of look at yourself. And you have to use the law of love to reframe everything. And if you do, then you'll obtain this higher level of humanity that God is inviting us into. So I've shown how our freedom in our inheritance, right? Our freedom is our inheritance. And we can experience this internal freedom each and every moment of our lives. It's right there. We can take our inheritance right now. And unlike religion, which teaches us that we are not free to do certain things because those things are sinful. Now think about your experience with religion and faith and all this morality teaching in the world, right? Those certain things are bad, you know, bad, 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 and you shouldn't do it. You'll be a naughty person. But see, Paul's gospel illuminates a few things that are inherently, very few things are inherently sinful in Paul's understanding. And his way of getting at that is showing us that anything can become sinful when love ceases to be the motivator behind our actions. This means that even a good deed such as praying is actually sinful if we do it from the wrong motivation of the heart, right? We're not moving from a place of love. And you see that in Luke 18, when the Pharisee goes up and he says this really prideful prayer, looking down at other people, right? That one, he didn't win any points by doing a good deed of praying. He did it the wrong way. Getting at the motivation of the heart is really the thing that this is all about, right? This is how we overcome this dark side within us. This is how we walk with the Spirit, as Paul's talking. See, the gospel redraws the lines of morality. Now, if you look at the book of Matthew in the Beatitudes, chapter 5, verses 22, 28, 32, 34, 39, and 44, like six times in one chapter, Jesus says to them, you have heard it said, referring to religious law, right, the ancients, you've heard it said this, but I say to you, right. So here's this redrawing of the line of morality. And so often we want to be better than we actually are. We need to temper our behavior. We strive to be and to overcome those things within us. And this is not an easy process, right? And the line of morality is in a different place. It's not on the outside. It's not this external rule, right? The internal measurement that Paul's getting at, which is reflecting what Jesus was teaching, is more free than an external measurement, but it requires way more maturity than an external moral rule, right? You can keep all the rules on the outside and totally be not keeping them within your heart. And we see this all the time as well, don't we? We call this hypocrisy. Now, Paul is revealing a convergence of two streams of truth, right? We're free to do as we want. However, if love isn't the motivating part of the heart, then our freedom requires self-discipline and tempering and work. Or else we're going to hurt ourselves. We're going to hurt others as well. See, that part of us that hurts ourselves or hurts others comes from this impulse, this instinct to satisfy our flesh or the shadow self. Okay, so this might sound a little complex, so I want to give you a few examples and kind of bake this out for you that hopefully it will help you. When you're hungry, you're more likely to pick foods that satisfy your appetite rather than those that actually build and heal your bodies, right? And this may not just apply to just being hungry. You might have actually developed, an addiction or a propensity to eat junk food, right? You might think that's the only food that tastes good now to you. Your palate might have totally conformed to junk food. And so now you can pick foods, right? You're free. You are totally free to eat all the junk food you want. But if we freely choose our poor food, if we freely, out of our freedom, choose to eat junk, we forfeit the freedom of a healthy mind and body, and we enter the captivity of sickness and decline. See, this is the same thing in all of these impulses, right? These over desires, these epithumias, as we're going to learn here in a few minutes, right? The impulse to be lazy must be tempered, or else you will destroy your life, right? You are free to just hit the couch and completely tune out. You can do it for a day, a weekend, a week, whatever you need. You can do that for free. But if that becomes your lifestyle, if you give vent to that impulse, you're going to destroy your life. You're going to become lazy, unhealthy, unmotivated. It's going to have a cyclic effect in your life, and you're not going to like the outcome. Now, Paul uses sexuality in Galatians 5:19 in this chapter, and he uses that as an example to reveal the message of freedom. So I really want to weave a few key points together for you. It's not just about our spending and living in debt. It's not just about our food choices. It's not just about, this kind of morality touches everything. And what is the hottest button for morality that you can think of? It's almost always sexuality. It doesn't matter whether you're in the church, whether you're at school, whether you're in sports, whether you're in politics. Sexual misconduct is always the headline, isn't it? If it can be. And it's the same here in Galatians 5:19. Paul uses it, and he was trying to explore this a little bit. And this is where I want to help you see that the lines of morality have been redrawn. You see, we are free to satisfy our sexual impulses if that can be done in love. That's what the passage is basically saying. Now, we don't hear it like that ever, right? However, we have to realize that, our flesh, it prefers to carve sexuality away from the whole person. And the result is that objectifies the other person and dehumanizes them, and that violates the law of love. So actually satisfying a sexual impulse is not as easy as it sounds if you're going to do it with the motivation of love in your heart. You see, if you lie and we cheat and we have no intention whatsoever, or if we don't even have the ability of honoring the whole life of the complete person, this means taking on their debt, taking on their insecurities, taking on their future, taking on their past, embracing their family, their extended family, their friends, their history, their dreams, hopes, and all. If you just carve out sexuality from all of that, then you are what the Bible would call living in sexual immorality, Right. The Bible's word for that is porneia, which is found in verse 19. And it's where we get the word pornography, but it actually is a term that's a broad spectrum term referring to all kinds of sexual impropriety. And why is that important? Well, Paul uses it. He throws this down and he says, look, man, this is one of those areas where people get off the rails really, really easy. And it's an area where people struggle so hard to bring their life into check. And this isn't about a Pollyannish, moralistic, you know, prudish kind of standard here. He's simply saying, honor the law of love within you. You see, religion teaches that our culture shows us too much sexuality, right? We hear this all the time. We're in a, you know, a sexually charged environment. Everywhere you go, there's just sex, sexuality. And it's just so freely put out there in front of you that, you know, how do you live in a world where they're just showing you too much sex all the time? And I understand where they get that perspective. But what the gospel's actually showing us here is that sexuality shows us too little of our humanity. See, the culture is actually not showing us the whole person. They're just showing the sexual expression of that person. And so in verse 16, when he says to live according to the flesh, is to indulge our creaturely impulse. Remember, we have the power to override that impulse for a greater, more integrated humanity. But if we indulge our creaturely impulse apart from the acts of love, which account for the entire life of the person, acting from anything other than loving others as ourself, like he says, it hurts ourself and our and others. It diminishes humanity. This is why it's sinful, because it hurts us. So when you hear in Scripture and you hear admonitions from teachers to say no, God is not saying don't do that because he's a big killjoy saying stop partying, stop having fun. I want you to live a boring life. No, he's saying no because it will hurt you. No, because it will diminish your future, your humanity, your culture, your society, right? And the Bible's definition of sin is not the bad thing you do. The Bible's definition of sin is actually non-faith. It's whatever is not of faith is sin, Romans 14:23. And so when we speed, when we overspend, when we don't pay attention to the budget we have, and we know when we are overspending, when we gossip, we talk about people, we hold prejudices against those people, right? We seek revenge. I'm getting even. They hurt me. They made me mad, right? All of these things are simply the obeying of the impulse of the flesh rather than operating from a motivation of love, which really hurts all of us. So failing to temper the shadow is creating a false life. And so the effect of walking according to the flesh is that the pseudo grows, the false person, the false self emerges and grows and becomes bloated and self-focused and self-protected. And that can take a long time to undo. That can take some serious deconstruction, right? This leads us to Paul's second point about learning how to dance with shadow and light. This is what he says in Galatians 5:16 through 17. He says, "But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing the things you want to do." Now, man, I have heard this, and I have been beaten up by this passage more times than I can count. And it took me until I really went and examined the Greek language before I understood that the texts that were all interpreted in most of the Bibles are really trying to spin a moralistic bent on you and uphold the historical Christian morality rather than actually teach you something. Right, they're still buying in. The people who make the decisions about what those words mean are actually just reframing old Christian morality back against you. And this is what I mean by that. The Bible translates this desires of the flesh as evil desire, Most of your Bibles all say that. And this has really created a lot of confusion, which has led to elaborate theologies and religious practices to exorcise all of the evil within us, right? This is, puts us on this binary war, this battle against our flesh. And we all feel like we just hate that part of ourselves. And so religion always becomes this thing that's like, well, I hate this dirty, evil, stinking, fleshly, corrupt part of myself, and I have to get away and become spiritual and a disembodied spirit one day. That's like this goal, is to get out of our body and into some spiritual reality. But the term here is epithumia. The term epithumia means over desire. It does not mean evil desire. It's plain and simple. It means over desire, not evil desire. And see, religion has endeavored to surgically remove our evil desire, right? That's been the whole process of the moral code in religion. And this is all religions. It's just like, hey, take that bad thing you do, stop doing it, carve it out, cut it out, surgically excise it. And you can do that with, gosh, every religion has its own recipe for how to get rid of these bad things, right? But God, Paul's gospel is revealing something different, right? It's not about removing our evil desire. It's about revealing. It's focused on tempering our over-desire, right? You're not, this might shock you, but in my book, Getting Better When You Can't, none of us actually possess a wrong desire. That was the premise of my book. You have not done anything wrong. You have only gone after the best things in your life in wrong ways. See, and I can prove that we haven't done bad things or wrong things. We only go after the good things in bad or wrong ways. And the gospel provides this monumental frame shift once we grasp what Paul is saying. Many people of faith have been relegated to a never-ending, exhausting exercise in futility known as killing the flesh because our pastors, our priests, our imams have not understood this. Now, there's a term in this sentence that we're, this verse that we're looking at. It's called teleo. Teleo is the term seen above for the gratify, right? To gratify, the teleos. But it really means to reach the end. And a better translation of this is this: live by the Spirit and you will not reach the end of your over desire found in the flesh. Think about that. You will not reach the end of your over desire found in the flesh. This is not eradicating it, is simply saying it's tempering it, right? This is how you make sure that a good thing doesn't become a bloated, horrible thing. And Paul's teaching us his dance moves. See, we all have the shadow within us because we all possess such light. I spent time on that last week. The impulse of our humanity may at first create a hunger to do what seems wrong. And rather than eradicate the whole desire, the gospel says you can temper it by learning the motivation that is ultimately behind it. So, for example, we can flagellate ourselves. We can whip ourselves, hurt ourselves, all we want to eradicate our immoral desires. But even if we never act on them, the desires just keep returning. Isn't that your experience? Right? You thought you could control your overspending, but you can't. You thought that, you know, the pornography was just going to dry up and go away one day, but it just keeps reoccurring. You thought that you could, you know, keep, you know, yourself in control around things to eat, but you can't. You can't discipline your life and shed the pounds and get into health. You can't motivate yourself to be productive. You, right? Everything, it's all here, every one of them, and every one of us is in this place, right? They just keep coming back, these desires. Well, that's because they're not evil desires. They're desires for the great things, but you haven't tempered them. See, there's enough light to keep from acting out, but not enough to eliminate the shadow. The shadow and the light are opposed to each other by design. That's the whole premise of Paul's talking. But so often, religion just says you have to keep fighting this battle and get rid of the dark side, get rid of the evil, get rid of the bad, get rid of the desire. And, you know, you go through life feeling like, man, if I have the desire, I'm really not winning. I'm losing. You know, I shouldn't even have the desire for that thing over there, but I do. I have the wrong desire, and it just tortures us. And our religious institutions penalize us. And Paul says that the spirit and the flesh are antikame, which means hostile to each other. So that whatever you do not want to do, those things you do. That's how it's translated in the Greek language. This is not so that they can keep you from doing what you want. That's not the best translation. It's whatever you want to do, those things, those whatever you do not want to do, those things you do. Galatians 5:17. What he's talking about is he's describing how we end up obeying the flesh. And it's simply a matter of taking a good thing and turning it into an ultimate thing. We overappraise what it can do for us. This is the very essence of idolatry. Now, this is an interesting idea because, you know, Paul uses that term, and I think we're going to get to this in a little bit, but it really is showing us how sexual immorality is actually the same thing as idolatry, the same term, porneia, right? Now, when we talk about overcoming our desires, right, our evil desires, our over-desire, it's not about eradicating it completely, like I said. It's about tempering it. And how do we do that, right? Paul explains here. He says, by contrast, he says, the Spirit of God illuminates our motivation, right? The Spirit of God shows us. It shines a light on all the darkness in there. And remember, the shadow isn't the thing. The shadow is simply what's not reflecting the light. The shadow is non-light. It's shining, the light is shining on an object, which is casting a shadow. See, there's more going on than your hunger or your horniness or your rage or your desire to get even. See, the deeper motivation is always your own validation, your own sense of approval, your need for acceptance at a soul level, at an ontology, a place of being. And what's the gospel message, which says we are loved and beloved by God? We are children of God. Once that penetrates our motivations, we no longer see the obedience to the flesh as the means to satisfy our true self. The shadow or the flesh is simply a prison masquerading as freedom, right? You thought having that relationship would make you feel great about yourself, and it did. It validated you for a while, but in the end, what did it do? It ruined everything. So if we trust, which means faith, our inner freedom, right? If we trust what the gospel has done, this idea of being loved and beloved by God, that there's no gap between us and God, like we saw in the early chapters, this justification, then we begin to see others as ourself. Right? You start to realize every single person I know is doing the same dance. They're battling this dark side within them. It's a different battle for each person, but they're all in it. We're all in it together. And as a result, you wouldn't want to harm somebody else when you see them as yourself. This is the essence of the law of love. You know, you shall love others as you love yourself. So walking in the Spirit or learning to dance or flow is really the key to a higher conscious living, right? You have to walk in the Spirit that's there. And face it, you know it. If you're a kleptomaniac, there's a part of you that knows stealing that thing is wrong. And you have to listen to that voice that says, this relationship is not a good choice. This activity is not going to build me. This food choice is actually harmful. My laying around doing nothing is hurting me and others, right? You know, because it creates this tension inside of you. See, the promise isn't that this is all going to go away. The promise is that the light will shine and illuminate the darkness. They're going to stay around together. And like I showed you last week, God isn't as glorified by the eradication of your shadow as he is by your struggle with it. And light and shadow, the spirit and the flesh, they work together or flow together in tension to create the beauty and the thrill of living. So if we forsake the dance, we forfeit our humanity on both sides. I mean, we can succumb to the impulse of a shadow, and that just leads to ruin, or we can actually flee from our shadow in some kind of platonic piety, which makes us hate the gift of life. Both sides are errors resulting from viewing this in a binary way. So we can go further in the enjoyment of our humanity by way of the Spirit than we can without it. This is the promise of freedom. You see, God's not laying down some hard rule and threat and punishment and everything else. We're going to get to that because I know you're thinking if you've read the chapter, well, yeah, actually, he does kind of threaten that punishment. No, we're going to get there. Hang in there with me, okay? What he's saying is that you need the Spirit if you want to live a free life. You see, a life of non-faith, a life where you don't really try, or a life of sin, as the Bible might call it, is not freedom. You might think, hey, I'm free to go and do all the things I want to do, but you are not free. If the Spirit isn't governing and tempering the over-desire, you're never free, because you'll always end up hurting yourself and other and becoming false. See, it's a cage, just as much as a religious sin management system is a cage. And hopefully some of you are beginning to become free from those as well. You see, we need not be afraid of our propensities. You don't have to be afraid of that thing that you desire. What you ultimately desire, if you have the eyes to see it, is something beautiful and amazing. Your deeper desire is about being. It's about acceptance. It's about validation. It's about, you know, connectedness, integration, right? But all these other things are just, they strapped on as though that's what we really wanted. They're just a lesser form. So we don't have to be afraid of our propensities. The fact that we notice them at all is the evidence of the Spirit working within us. It's the gift of humanity to say that is an instinct, that is an impulse, and it's not helpful. The fact that you can determine it as not helpful means that the Spirit is working. So trust it. Trust the Spirit. And the Spirit will allow us to enjoy our humanity as much as possible without it bringing harm to us, right? Because it's this counterbalance. It's this opposite tension that keeps us from running our humanity into the ditch. So it's not about, you can fulfill your desire. You just can't fulfill the over-desire. And if you understand that, then you understand how the Spirit allows you to work and dance within this tension. The light invites us to go beyond our creaturely impulses and past our temptations into the discovery of our true self found in God. Now, that is a big discovery. But so few of us ever get there. We just don't know what it's like to live 5 minutes past a temptation because we give in all the time. But what the Spirit is pulling you and inviting you into is a deeper, bigger, greater, more authentic, real humanity, your real self. And you get there by dancing with this tension. You don't get there by cutting out the whole motivation. You get there by following the true motivation to its natural end. And that is the true you found in God. And nowhere else is the self ever going to be truly free. And that freedom is the deepest cry of your soul. Everything you've ever tried to go after has left you wanting, has left you hungry. Every time you've given vent to the over-desire, where you've taken a desire and pretended that that thing could ultimately satisfy you, you were left disappointed. You were left broken and less than. You see, the satisfaction of the soul is when we find our freedom within the love of God. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now, and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com, and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.